I think it's up to all of us to live our legacy today. Like, screw leaving it. I want to live it.
Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is a very special bonus episode where I am joined by Trevor Crane, a sought-after speaker, trainer, and coach, and author of 10 number one international best-selling books. He's the founder of the bestseller Big Business Publishing and the Greatness Network. He's host of the Greatness Quest podcast and president of Step Up Strategies Incorporated, where he and his team help companies outperform, outsell, and outlast the competition through systemic and strategic consulting, coaching, training, marketing, and support. Trevor's mission is to help people take their life and their business to the next level, no matter how successful they already are. Today, Trevor joins the techie community to share his energy, wisdom, and wit. Trevor, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
I am excited to be here.
I love the energy.
So with that energy in tow, please, we need to hear a story of how it is you saw the future long before you decided to begin branding yourself, building out any sort of business, long before 2003 when you became a business coach, and long before you began writing books. When you were a kid, what did you think your future was going to look like?
Whoa, that's an extension of the question I hadn't anticipated. Okay. When I was a kid, good Lord. Okay. So my great grandfather passed away when I was maybe 8 or 9 years old, great, great grandfather, something like that. And I learned for the first time that my family had come from money, or at least some generations ago, there was money. And I looked around my life and I was like, well, hold on. Our family fights about money all the time. What do you mean there were millions of dollars somewhere that I don't see it? You know, my mom made my clothes by hand and I was embarrassed going to school. So, you know, now I'm embarrassed that I was such a little bastard. I was like, you know, not respecting my parents working their asses off for me. So, I guess when I was little and at that time, I mean, I remember crying when we found out that a grandfather I'd never met had passed away, but I was there with my two younger sisters and I thought, you know what, it's up to me to win back the family fortune, whatever I meant, whatever that meant to me at 8 or 9. And I grew up, my dad was a horseshoer, and so I was kind of – my parents said, hey, if you want to have freedom, if you want to be successful, you need to run your own business. And ever since I started my first business when I was 4 years old. Wow. My dad left the house one time and he said, Trevor, it's up to you to take care of the family, you know, leaving it up to you. And so I started my own business. I liked rocks at that age, and I figured that who else wouldn't like rocks? So I picked up rocks from my yard. And I sold them to the neighbor, the neighbors, and I'm assuming they bought one. So I had something that first day that very few business owners ever have, and that's a profit. at different stages in my life, whatever, however old I've been, I've had a different vision for what life would be. I think it was very pie in the sky, rich, like, I don't know, like some kind of weird cartoon of what rich meant, like Scrooge McDuck or something. So, but at every phase of success that I've had, I've always tried to visualize the future. And sometimes when you originally asked me the question and you sent it to me, Lori, I thought about a time I had a water sports business, because you took me back to like a time I had really made a vision come true, because the pet rock business didn't work that well for me at 4. and the different visions I have of success. But when my water sports business, I had a parasail boat. And for those of you who've ever been parasailing before, it's really cool. And if you haven't, you sit on a boat and there's a parachute on the back and you fly up in the air and it's the coolest thing ever. And I was sitting on that boat one day dreaming of being so successful, because I was struggling at that point. I wished I had people to fly around in circles, and I didn't. So I was sitting there dreaming about the future of me having more than one boat and me being on the beach watching my boats fly by with other captains driving the boat. And at that point, I think I had to, at the end of that day, Lori, I had to go take a shower on the beach and run across the street and wait tables all night because I was slowly killing myself. You know, my business sucked. I wasn't making enough money to pay rent, and I had to wait tables to support my habit as if I was a drug addict and I needed this extra income at night. And so I finally figured it out, and I remembered it was a couple of years later. I was on the beach negotiating a multi-million-dollar deal, at least I thought that it was at the time, and I saw my two parachutes fly by on two of my boats with my crew flying it, and I just – it was an epiphany. It was one of those moments that, like, I had imagined it, that I would be negotiating a bigger, better adventure tours and water sports deal while my boats were out there running, making money. And it happened. Right. It happened.
Right. Yeah, visualization is extremely important in life, having the ability to take a step back, calm your mind, and really just focus on what it is you're envisioning for that future. I think it's one of the bigger pieces that a lot of business owners tend to ignore or don't take enough time to do. It's one thing to think about what you may want in the future. It's a very different thing to take the time to really visualize what that would look like. So I love the way you explain that coming across. What were some of the first steps that you took when you decided, okay, I am going to start my first business? And of course, this is, you know, no longer being a child. What was the first business that you started as an adult? And what were some of the first steps you feel like you took in terms of creating that first company?
So again, some good questions. I was always entrepreneurial, and so whether I was selling candy when I was a little kid, a few years older than four, and then when I became a young man, my dad taught me to shoe horses, and that was my first business when I was in high school, where I had some responsibility, and my job was to put shoes on horses. For those people who don't know what that is, like, someone has to actually. A lot of people think they're called a blacksmith. That was a business, but you know, I just got started. Like, I've never had the fear of getting started with something, and doesn't mean I always succeeded or failed, but I just started off by making a sale. A lot of people think they need to start with a logo, and they need to start with their There's all this garbly goo. I have a podcast called Greatness Quest, and I interview successful entrepreneurs. And a buddy of mine I was interviewing, and he's a multimillionaire, and he's really successful. And I asked him a question on one of my podcasts is called Race to Seven Figures, and we interview millionaires and ask them, if you had to start over, how would you do it? And I asked him the question, and he said something very similar. He said, well, I'd pick what business I'm going to be in. Like, what am I going to sell? Like, what's the business model? And then I would pick up the phone and I'd start making sales. He wouldn't work on a website. He wouldn't work on logos. You know, he wouldn't spend more he would just get down to it and try to start making the sale. I had a conversation with someone last night, and I was talking with them about their business plan, and they said they'd created this online product. And they had put all this energy into it in a 6-week program, and they're all excited, and they were building websites and funnels and working on their logo and And they're like, I'm like, well, how much are you going to charge for that? And she actually approached me to help her with her book. And she's like, well, the reason I have the book, which I love books, is to sell my stuff on the back end. I'm like, well, what's your stuff? And she told me, and I'm like, well, how much is that 6-week course? And she said, $500, $499. I'm like, okay, cool. Have you sold it to anybody yet? She said, no. She wanted to, but she's working on her 13-week course and on her 12-month program and whatever. And I said, okay, that's fine. I go, if somebody takes your 6-week course, is it going to give them the result that they want? And she said, well, probably not. She goes, probably about 8 out of 10 people won't take the action, you know, because the course is pretty intensive and they won't do it. And I was like, what? I'm like, well, whatever you do, don't sell that.
Right.
You don't sell to somebody be that 8 out of 10 people fail. Like, why don't you sell something that you get 8 out of 10 people succeed? Like, why don't we do that one?
Oh,
so I think it comes down to taking action and not making frickin' excuses. And I mean, and I talk to a lot of people, and they think starting a business is a big deal. You know what? It's not. That 4-year-old that picked up a rock and went to the next door neighbor and said, hello, do you like rocks? You know, maybe there's a better pitch than that. But, I mean, it's you get started and you can pre-sell your idea. You can pre-sell your widget. Elon Musk did it with the Tesla. He said, hey, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a car sometime in the future. It's going to be great. It's going to be 50 grand. It's the cheapest electric car you'll ever get your hands on. We don't know when we're going to make it. We haven't even made the factory that makes the batteries that make the car. But if you'd like to buy one today, it's $1,000 deposit. And sometime in the next couple of years, we're not really sure when because we don't know because we haven't built the factory. You can buy it. And 500,000 people bought a car in 30 days.
Because so, we validated the cost.
Get the party started. Get the party started.
Definitely. I love the way you approach that because I think there are many people who think it's difficult to start a business. The only thing that you have to do to start a business is make the actual sale. So once you've made a sale, you're in business. It doesn't matter what else you've done outside of it. Like you said, it doesn't matter if you've built out a website, a funnel, or sent any sort of email anywhere. It doesn't matter what kind of marketing you've invested in or not invested in. Until you've made a sale, there's no actual business. So validating.
Well, nothing happens until you make a sale.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so, the big nothing.
I'd love for you to give a little more background on the greatness quest as a whole.
Okay, let's see. It's nice to hear about the accolades of a best-selling author or having been successful in business, and I can use the word million as though that makes me sound cool. But let's face it, I've had some bigger challenges than that are really more framing my past and what I've created today than anything. So it took me over 20 years to publish my first book. So for those of you out there who haven't published a book yet, you're probably ahead of me. And if I can do it, you can do it. We've now got 10 number one best-selling books that I wrote myself. I co-authored some of those with some other people, and one of them was my daughter, who is now 10 years old. And up until last month, I used to be able to say she was a nine-time, nine-year-old best-selling author. So she's got 9 books. I'd rather brag about her than me. But again, if a little kid can do it, she wrote her first book when she was 7.
Nice.
You can too. And I'm going to get to this question about Greatness Quest here in a second, but you brought up the book thing, and I think it's important because it can sound like I'm too cool for school, and that's not the case. I struggled, and this was a vision that I had years ago as well. You asked, like, what's a dream you ever had then, and how did that come true? I eventually was like, that's it. I'm pissed. I'm frustrated. And Lori, I got to make it happen. I'm going to write books. And I found a mentor that could help me get it published and make it a bestseller and build a business behind it. And that's what I was missing. And I got all excited and I told my wife, we're going to do this. I'm going to write books. You're going to write books. My daughter's going to write books. We're going to be bestsellers. We'll be international bestsellers. And she just we got in a big old argument over the weekend. Don't put that on me. And I'm like, what? You know, she's like, it's a Saturday. We're supposed to be hanging out with the family. She was fearful about my vision because I'm like, we can do it. We'll build hotels on the moon. And she's like, it's, you know, too crazy. Like, I can't even publish a book. And what do you mean every client you have in the future will publish books? So now we have a publishing company that does that. And I've built a team together to support people do that. Now, where did all this start? Years ago, my grandfather, another grandfather, passed away. And before he died, when he was 92, he was in bed and probably not going to get back out. And I was asking him questions. I was trying to engage him because I knew he didn't have a lot longer on this planet. And he said he wrote me a letter, and it was the last letter he ever sent me. And I'd asked him the question of what are your magic moments, like what are your favorite memories? And he wrote a list, and on that list I found what I thought was a guide to greatness. And after he passed away, I had it taped in my journal. I still have it. And I found like a pattern, like 3 core things that was a great strategy to living a great quality of life. So I came up with the idea of Greatness Quest, and I started my first podcast, and literally I just started one day. Lori, I was again frustrated. It had been an idea. I'm like, I'll do this. I'll start a podcast. I'll start this thing. What does Greatness Quest mean to me? It's that you have this mission to become your best. And at one stage I was frustrated. I'm like, I just got to get this party started. So I pulled out my video camera when I had very bad hair and two gigantic cold sores on my face. So I looked like I was a leper. And I just talked from the heart, and I just started to speak. And it's not the greatest video on the planet Earth, but it became the first episode of Greatness Quest. And I believe we are on that journey to become our best. And now my show's in its fourth season or fifth season, kind something like that. And we interview successful business owners and business leaders and entrepreneurs, like, to unpack their success. And the lessons I learned from my grandfather that first day, I eventually turned into a book. It's generated a lot of value for me and my family between the time we started it and now. But the three lessons I got is that my grandfather chose in his final moments to find times that he had – there are three P's. It's the people that you hang out with, that you are passionate about what you do with those people, and that you're 100% present in the moment. Those are the three things I got from his letter, is that every one of his memories, he was present, not wishing he was someplace else. He was with awesome people that he loved, doing something that he was geeked out about. And I thought, what a beautiful gift. And I shifted a lot of things in my life from that letter, and I started to just attract more things into my life. I started to say I need to hang out with more successful people. And within a month, Richard Branson came down and sat next to me at the airport. Like, I met the coolest people because I set the intention that I needed to hang out with cooler people. And I started doing only things that I loved. And even if I hate doing stuff, I still find a way to become passionate about it, because why the hell wait? Because my grandfather was, you know, died, and he had some regrets as well. He wished he'd written a book and hadn't. And so I was like, screw it. I refuse to live my life like that. I think it's up to all of us to live our legacy today. Like, screw leaving it. I want to live it. And so his letter was a little bit of a kick in the ass that I wasn't doing those things. I was at the time. I wasn't doing things I was always passionate about. I wasn't hanging out with people I thought were cool. I wasn't talking to awesome people like you. And I wasn't passionate about my stuff, and I was oftentimes thinking, what the hell am I doing with my life? I wish I was doing this, and I wish I was doing that, because I think we're always growing, and our journey, again, back to Greatness Quest, is to become our best. So I'm not really satisfied unless I'm trying to get to the next level.
You really got started. I think that's the resounding piece of each of the stories that you're mentioning, is really nothing held you back. Like you said, you didn't have that fear that a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with throughout their journey. You had a lot of motivation and a lot of personal reasons that drove you to make sure that you weren't allowing yourself to end up with the same regrets, but also taking the lessons from a legacy that was passed on. So I think that's absolutely beautiful. I actually just lost my grandfather in March at 95. It's funny that you just stated that. And I'm going to clip this from the actual episode. I'm just telling this to you. It's funny that you said what you did, because as I just mentioned to my husband, you know, I wish we had sat down with him and asked him what pieces of his life he felt were the greatest memories. So, Trevor, I think you're an amazing person. But I'm going to pull it together here, and we can get back to recording.
Well, you better keep this as part of the podcast, because that's what people want to hear, is your genuine – are your genuine feelings, and I wouldn't hide from that, or not even my words right now, is just I think – it's an honor to be on this journey with everybody here, and we're in a world where honesty and integrity and authenticity and vulnerability is the only thing the world respects. That's what our young people – that's why they watch YouTube and they pick their favorite little YouTuber person that's just being raw with their phone and their computer, and they're talking about stuff that's interesting to them. And they don't have to go to the – NBC, ABC, Fox, and be like only eat what the networks decide to feed. We're in a world where people get to choose to listen to your podcast, and if they're listening, that means they're engaged and that they want to hear our authenticity, and they don't need to hear my BS or yours. They need to hear what's raw, and that's what we are. That's the world we live in today. I believe.
And see, therein lies one of my fears. I swear I spend more time editing than I do anything else.
But I do zero of that. I used to work with Grant Cardone a little bit. I had my podcast, my TV show on his network. And I don't know if you know that name, but he's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
And Grant told me, I was talking to him about what makes a great TV show, you know, for the network, and he said, you know, it's the one that everybody pays attention to. He said most of these yahoos out there are too busy with production, and he's like, you should put 90% of your efforts into promotion and 5% of your efforts into production. He's like, just rip it. We just hit it and go, because the world's spinning too fast and you don't have time, and most people aren't out there promoting stuff. So he's like, make great stuff, do it on a consistent basis, you'll get better and better, and then you rip it, you put it out there. And he says the quality of viewership he got from an iPhone video he took outside a cruise ship, he gets just many views that when he's sitting there on the deck smoking a cigar, talking about whatever he thought was cool that day, as he does for a really highly produced blah, 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 blah. It just doesn't matter. Rip it, get it done, and be yourself. And I had to take that on because I do a whole bunch of, oh, my God, should that font be 1 point larger?
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
Maybe it should be. It would look so much cooler if it was. Could we just make that 10% darker? Like, good God, who cares?
One of my favorite podcast hosts, John Dumas, always calls it analysis paralysis. It runs deep in entrepreneurs, and it's something I suffer from on a regular basis, is analysis paralysis, too concerned with the production end. I think that I work with a lot of my clients, as well as struggle with myself, getting out of what I call wino mode, which is just being stuck working in your business and not on your business, into boss mode, where you're actually building out operations to support your success. Now, I agree with you 100%. Analysis paralysis can definitely hinder your ability to move forward in business, in life, and something I will take into great consideration as I continue to move forward and try to just go ahead and rip it instead of continually editing things. I swear I will. Anyhow, Trevor, do you have any tips, tricks, or tools that you could share with the audience?
No, I'm completely.
I figured.
I know. So here's, I'll give everybody a. So let me see. If I was to give everybody a gift today. And someone asked me this question recently, if I was to go back in time and tap myself on the shoulder and give myself some great advice, at what age would I visit myself and what would I say? And I think that there are two core skills, and two things that I would recommend, to myself at a younger age, maybe when I was 20 or something, and I'm now in my 40s, I would have said, you know, number one, write a book. And you just pick one of the books. I had many ideas back then. I just like freaking finish it. I mean, as an author, I'm so grateful my daughter now has the identity of being an author. I mean, she came up to me, remember, she's 9. She said, Daddy, I think I want my next book to be about blank. I mean, that's she awesome. Grows up with the identity of being an author. I mean, and if you're to think of an author, you know, if you don't know anything else about them other than that they're an author and maybe a best-selling author, that sounds cool because I like that. You know, are they successful or unsuccessful? You know, are they intelligent or not intelligent? Are they rich or are they poor? I mean, an author, the perspective of an author. I mean, if you see Larry King Live or Good Morning America, I mean, unless somebody founded Uber or created Nike they're going to be introduced as best-selling author of blankety blank book or founder of and creator of whatever. You were gracious enough to say, Trevor, you've done this and you've done that. I've got these names on things that probably people have never heard about before, but they do know author. They're like, ooh, author. That must be a good guy because of that. So I'd say everybody should write a book and that your message matters. If you think that it doesn't, you know, then you're just mistaken. You know, I don't care if you're a great mom, if you're a great dad, if you're a great friend, if you have been through some type of hardship, if you're going through it right now, your message matters. I mean, oftentimes the things that help my clients the most or have helped me most is when somebody shares with me their challenges and setbacks and failures and concerns and fears and whether they've walked through the fire or not yet, they could be right in the middle burning and on flames. Ah, you know, I'm like, I learned from that. Like, oh crap, you don't want to do that. That sucks. So your message matters and you should write a book. And had I done that when I was 20, good Lord. And we're in a world where you don't need permission from Barnes and Noble or whatever, Simon and Schuster to publish your book. I'm a book publisher now and I help people do it. You just do it. You know, the assessment that I had no fear is not, you had said that, that's much too generous. I completely have a significant amount of fears. I just don't let them hold me back. Or if I do find that they do, that pisses me off. And then I'm like, screw that, and I'll try to do it anyway. And then I do one core thing, and that's get help. I learned early on, like, I'm just not the smartest, I'm not the sharpest pencil, the brightest crayon in the box, whatever you want to say, like, that's just never been me, so I need a lot of help. And if you think about it, the most successful people in the world get a bunch of help. Even Mr. Trump or President Trump is getting some help. You know, you just can't do everything yourself. And not everyone's a Trump fan. I get it. Some of you are. You're like, I love him. Someone else is like, I can't believe he said it. That jackass. How could he mention Trump? You know, so I don't know what you think. But I'm just saying, get help is my one thing. So if you want to publish a book, get some help. I'm right here. I will give everybody a free book that I wrote, and I've got two of them that have just came out. If you know my name, and if you don't know that, I'll still give it to you now, Trevor Crane. Go to trevorcrane.com, and you'll find out all about my awesomeness and a lot of my failures. But if you go to trevorcrane.biz, I'll give you my books for free. And it'll give you so many tips about – one of my books is called Big Money with Your Book Without Selling a Single Copy. And we can talk about that if you'd like today. But then I've got another book called How to Write the Right Book Fast. And those are my two gifts for you. And if you're one of the first ones to pick that up, go scoop it up. And I'm going to send you a physical copy of the book. Not only will you get it immediately on your phone, I've got a cool little app and it'll go right on your phone and you can read it in 10 seconds. Before we're done talking today, you can have it on your phone. Go to trevorcrane.biz. But then if you just like fill in the blanks, you send me your physical address and leave me a raving review, then I will send you a physical copy of the book. By the way, if you think my book completely sucks, then you can send me a private email. You don't have to hang me. You can if you want. Go ahead and go on Amazon and say he sucks. I need haters too, so that's okay. But I'll give you those as a gift. And I said that there were two things, Lori, that I wish I would have done or I'd give myself advice. One is the book. The bonus was get help. That's my core thing always. But the second thing, because that's kind of two, and now I'm giving you three, so I'm confused with my own math. It's influence. I wish I'd have learned to sell. I wish I'd have learned to get out of my own way. I wish I was so scared to be salesy or to make an offer, and I didn't even like to receive money. It made me freak out, especially if I loved what I did. It felt wrong. The first time I started as a consultant, and I fall in love with my clients, and then I love talking to them, and then they give me money, and I felt bad. I'm like, gosh, I should be paying them. I'm so filled up. And so I stopped accepting money for a while. It was friggin' freaky. Like, I'm like, no, I can't. You know, I had gotten way over that. So in June, the second weekend in June, June 9th, 10th, and 11th, I invite all of your listeners and anybody listening to this right now to be my guest at an event that my wife and I teach called Advanced Sales Mastery, to get you to master the one-on-one communication skills, the influence skills, so you can master the one-on-one sales so you don't feel like you're a jackass or in salesy. And then we have a whole day, it's a bonus day, of teaching people to sell one to many. How do you speak on a podcast or on Facebook Live or on traditional media or on a webinar? And how do you influence people in a cool way that gets people to be preconditioned to want to buy from you in like an elegant way? And so we have that. That's my gift to everybody. If you reach out to me at trevorcrane.com, you can probably find a way to get on my calendar. And, you know, I will actually just give you the details about the event. And those are my two things, books and influence. And for the love of all that is holy, if there is something you want that you don't have, go get help. My help, her help, for his help. Find somebody out there. Please, Jesus, get somebody to help you. Because go out there to make it yourself. Like, why on God's green earth would someone do that? Lori, you know the story of the Wizard of Oz, right?
Of course.
And the Dorothy lands in Oz, and she's like, oh, no, Toto, where are we, right? And everybody's Toto. We're all Dorothy. We're all wearing that skirt. I know, imagine me in a skirt, like it's and a little checkered outfit, and a little dog, too. Yeah, that's me. And we're all there, and we're like, oh, where are we going to go? I don't know. And then the little people show up, and everybody's listening right now. Hopefully, I don't know if you're a little person or not. You probably are, right? But the little people are like, you know, you need to go to the wizard. And there's always a wizard. You got to figure out where the Emerald City is. And you're like, and then there's a path. It's the yellow brick road. And so we all need to just acknowledge that we're in Oz and we don't exactly know where. We all want to go home. Can I just please go home? Whatever the promised land is. And you said, have you ever closed your eyes and dreamed about what you wanted and made it come true? Sure. You know, and I've also had nightmares. So I'm glad those didn't come true. But we listen to, you know, everybody gives you directions. They're like, go to the Wizard of Oz. And then there is a path, and it's a yellow brick road. And along the way, Dorothy got some help. First it was the Scarecrow, and then it was the Woodsman, and then it was the Cowardly Lion. And all of them had their own issues, right? They're not all perfect. But one thing is for sure, if you give up and you go, ah, screw it, the path sucks, you know, and I'm going to beat down this myself. No, 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 don't go off the path. There's flying monkeys, you know, and you're going to get carried away in the Wicked Witch and there's a field of poppies and it's going to suck. No, stay on the path. And on the path, all these dudes and people and gals and animals, I guess, that'll help you if you stay on the path. So stay on the path. Wherever the path is, it's a mentor that shows you the way. And they've already beaten down the path, man. It's paved. It's easy. Don't go it alone. Don't. Like, the big mistake is, he's right. I'll go do it. At what? Who said that? Who said that? Friggin' bullshitters. That's who said it. You know, get help. And then do what your mentor tells you to do. Then stay on the path. And don't listen to too many friggin' mentors, because like everybody's like, oh no, he told me this, and they go that way. He told me that. It's like they're winning a going tug of war, and they're being pulled in 20 different directions. I need to do Twitter. I'll start that book. I'll do the podcast. You know what I'll do is I'll start Facebooking. I'll start YouTubing. What on earth? Good Lord, pick something and get some help, and let your mentor lead you to the promised land. And if your mentor doesn't have the result you want, friggin' don't follow that mentor. And if your mentor hasn't helped somebody else get that result, that's how the measure. You know, you wouldn't go to the gym and be like this. Some guy's like 347 pounds smoking a cigarette and doing crack cocaine. And he's like, do more push-ups. You're like, you're not listening to that guy. And let's say that you're like, oh, no, my trainer is buff. He's just so delicious looking. I want to be just like him. Well, look at his clients. Are his clients buff? Or his client's awesome, because if that mentor hasn't created other badasses, other Arnold Schwarzenegger, or the young women, other Angelina Jolies, you know, Demi Moores that are just so delicious. I don't know who's famous right now because I don't pay any attention, but let's just say somebody who's really sexy. If they're not pumping out just result after result after result, don't follow that gal either. You're looking for people who they're a Zen master. They don't have to brag about how awesome they are, because they're like, oh, look at my clients. You know, if you like results like that, maybe you want to come over here. That's the difference between confidence and conviction. confidence is all barky and yelly, like I'm yelling at you right now. Rawr, 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 I'm so confident. You know, the 20-year-old Marine that's like, follow me, we'll take that hill. The Zen master is like in his 60s. He shows up in frickin' sandals and he's like, come on, you know, I've taken about a billion people up this hill. It's pretty easy. We just go this way. Who are you going to follow? Conviction moves people. Confidence moves you only while you hear their voice ringing in your ears.
Trevor, thank you. You just packed that last couple of minutes with so much. I have to rewind. First off, I have to rewind and say thank you so much. So I hope the audience caught that. You have provided, we will be sure to link to in the show notes page, the link for two books that you are giving away that are with the book launch, and you are going to have those as downloadable via your app. There is The Big Money with Your Book and How to Write the Right Book Fast. So those are the two books that you will receive via download once you go to, it is epicauthor.com. So we'll be sure to include the links to that in the show notes page. So thank you for that, Trevor. But I also love what you were explaining. You know, right before you kind of got into the confidence versus conviction, you were explaining, you know, kind of three core things there were the things that you would tell yourself if you could go back, which is to find your yellow brick road. Really pick something, figure out what that is, and focus on it, but never go it alone, to really get help, because, of course, we all need that help. I love the analogy you gave there with Dorothy and the yellow brick road and how she had help along the way. Nobody's perfect. It's not about having perfection on that path. It's about making sure that you just stick to it. And like you said, staying on that path. So that's excellent. Trevor, you've been absolutely amazing. And I thank you so much for all that you shared and provided to the audience. The show is really designed to help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for a new business or a new product in an industry that none of us may have been thinking of. So across the board, with all of the books that you've written, the communities that you've created, if there were anything at all that you could change in any business across the board, what do you feel like it would be and why?
One thing to win, I guess, is a buddy of mine is actually writing a book about this, where he's got this subject right now. It's a keynote talk that he delivers, and it's a subject that he tries to live every single day. You know, my wife has been more financially successful than I have been in the last couple of years, and I'm doing pretty well, but I'm going to brag about her right now, is that, I have had a tendency to try to keep multiple balls up in the air at the same time, like a juggler. But we're not in the circus, you know. When I mentioned Elon Musk just now or a little bit ago, you know, he's known for one thing. Now, maybe he's known for multiple things. Now he's trying to build a space technology or whatnot. But for the most part, you know, people do one thing. You know, Sam Walton had Walmart, and Ronald McDonald has McDonald's, and the Colonel has Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Sir Richard Branson may have done a lot of badass things, but, you know, he did one thing at a time. He had Virgin Records, and now he's got Virgin Airlines, and now he's had Virgin, I don't know, he's had Virgins. I don't know all the stuff he's done, right? But it's one thing to win, and a lot of people think, oh, I'm a serial entrepreneur, and this is me, you know, I'm like, I'll do that, you know, and someone gets me a wild idea, and I'm like, let's do it! And it's like, well, so if, you know, the mistakes have been, and I don't know, they are mistakes. I can make excuses for why they've been awesome, and they have been. But if you just want to win, if you want to really succeed in an extraordinary way, focus, man. And that's what I would do. And then the other thing is like when you realize that your passion's not into something anymore, get the hell out. Good God. Like I've burned two businesses to the ground, you know, because I self-sabotage the crap out of them because I'd lost my drive for it. And then I got greedy because I didn't want to leave too much money on the table walking away. And I built something, and how could I walk away from it? Like, and I'll tell you, the most successful people I know are those, especially my clients, that have created the biggest success. They'll take some of my biggest failures, and they'll like learn from them. And we'll get off one of our coaching calls, or I'll have a conversation at a picnic, and they'll be like, "Yeah, I took your advice." And I'll go, "What do you mean you took my advice?" Like, "Well, I just had this employee, and you told me how, you know, when you have the wrong employee, you got to let go of them right away, and that every minute they stay working for you is a bit." And so I fired her, and I'm like, "You did what? I didn't tell you to fire her, that poor gal." She's like, "But you know what? I did it." So I guess the thing is focus. One thing to win, I would have just focused on that one boulder that I'm trying to push up the hill. And if you can imagine a diagram right now of those of you that have more than one boulder you're pushing up a hill. This T. Harv Eker did this for me one time. And he drew this diagram, very high-tech diagram of like a hill, right? Like one line, just a, and then a stick figure. And then he drew a couple of boulders. And he said, it takes a 10-plus energy to roll this ball, this boulder up a hill. But multiple streams of income, like people are like, I do these three things. And then he drew more boulders up above the dude. And he's like, what happens if they all take a 10 energy to roll up the hill? What happens? Because if you only have a 10 energy you can put towards it, what happens if you look back? You get freaking steamrolled. You know, you're in the middle of an avalanche. That's what happens. And most people get freaking just steamrolled, or they barely make progress. And so it's that, I guess. It's just really specific laser focus and that one piece of advice of getting help from a mentor who can walk you to the promised land would be it. And then the day that you decide this sucks and I want out, and I'm not talking about the fact that it sucks because it gets hard. That is, don't be a pussy. Don't give up. Don't be a wussy. I shouldn't have said pussy. That's our president says that. I'm just kidding. But it's if you decide that your passion's not into something anymore, and you're gonna self-sabotage that, get out and pick that next path. But don't do it because you're being a wimp and you just don't want to do the hard work. The other fear about this is that people pick, like, I know, I'll jump over there, and I call it too many ladders. Like, people climb up a ladder and then it starts getting scary and they're like, oh no, you know, and they can't see the top because the path they were going for is through the clouds, and they're like, it's a little scary. And up at the top of the ladder, it starts to get shaky. They're like, is somebody holding that thing down there? I don't know if this is safe. You know, we better climb down. And so we're like, look over, and we're like, oh, look at that other ladder over there. That's going to be great. And we jump down. We go to the other ladder, start climbing up, and then it gets scary on that one. And we look back at the first ladder we were on. We're like, man, maybe I shouldn't have left. And then they're like, ah, screw it. I'll go pick another one. Too many ladders. So pick something and stick with it. But if you find that you're on the wrong path, good God. I mean, I've done the wrong business from time to time. You know, we grow. Thank God I'm not still in the water sports business. And, you know, there are times to make a shift. And those people who are employees and you're like, I got to break out and do something, or you're in the wrong freaking business doing the wrong freaking thing, then you do need to quit. But when it comes down to it, I took on too many businesses at once. I wrote 10 books I published 10 books, my daughter, myself, and my wife and I all published 10 books in 3 months.
Wow.
And that was a mistake. I mean, I learned a lot in that. We got those books done. They all became best-selling books, and we've got successful businesses behind them. But it wasn't nearly as powerful as focusing on one and doing it really well. Now, I did it with intention. I wanted to prove that it could be done, that I could publish an amazing book in that time frame, and I got it done, but it cost other things. I sacrificed the other successes that I could have been having. And that's a pattern that has shown up multiple times in my life, because I'm like, I'll do it. You're like, I don't know. Like, right. You just dares me. Like, I double dog dare you. And then I'm like, I'll take it on. You know, that's – so to correct something, it would be pick one thing to win.
juggling versus focus is definitely a resounding issue for many entrepreneurs. We all tend to have a million and one ideas that pop up or suggestions or opportunities. And I think it's just kind of a tendency. It's a way of an entrepreneurial lifestyle. I think that's kind of the nature of it. But I'd love to hear if any of the audience had any sort of suggestions or ideas as to how to go about, you know, kind of reducing that issue that many entrepreneurs do face, which is just, you know, the inability to contain ourselves with Trevor, you've been absolutely wonderful. And again, I thank you for joining us today. Please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
TrevorCrane.com, and you can find all the awesomeness. If you want to get that book, go to TrevorCrane.biz. For those of you who are crazy enough to take on writing a book and you want to go for it right now, I'll talk to you personally and go to epicauthor.com/call. And this is a gift for you if you had the patience to stay with us all the way to the end of this podcast. You can book an appointment with me, and I'll help you with basically a book and your business. It'll be a free call. It's my gift to you since you made it this far, epicauthor.com/call. And that's the goodness.
Trevor, thank you again. Thank you. And we will be sure to link to all of the tools, the tips, and your offers through the show notes page as well. So, Trevor, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Techie community, your message matters. So if you are ready to share your story, do not pass this offer up. Reach out to Trevor Crane at epicauthor.com/call. And don't forget to grab both copies of Trevor's new books at trevorcrane.biz or trevorcrane.com. You can also connect to all of these links through our show notes page at technology-equality.com/Trevor Crane. Thank you once again for joining us here for this very special bonus episode.
And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions. Enjoy the week.